Good evening, everybody, and thank you for coming to our Monday, November 9th, 2020 board meeting. I'm going to ask for a motion to go into executive session.
So moved.
Motion, Dr. Mastin.
Second.
Second, Ms. Jones. All those in favor?
Aye.
Unopposed. Thank you.
Oh, and Mr. Reed, for the record, executive session is going to be held in the boardroom in the district office. We had published that executive session would be in 231 for a more open space. We decided to rearrange the boardroom and have it over there, and I don't think anybody will have an objection to that. So, just for the record.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. It's now 5 o'clock. I want to thank everybody for coming to our Monday, November 9th, 2020 regular board meeting. Need a motion to return to open session.
So moved.
Motion, Dr. Mastin. Second. Mr. Johnson, all those in favor?
Aye.
Unopposed. Like to go ahead and stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Just take a moment of silence. Approval of the agenda. Need a motion to approve.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Johnson.
Second.
Second, Dr. Mastin. All those in favor?
Aye.
Not opposed. Need approval of regular and executive minutes from the October 14th, 2020 board meeting and the November 5th, 2020 special board work session.
So moved.
Second.
Motion, Ms. Weiss. Second, Mr. Brittingham. All those in favor?
Aye.
Not opposed. Personnel action items. There'll be two parts of this. A will be two hires, one resignation, and one to remove the acting superintendent and issue a contract to our superintendent. Need a motion to approve.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Brittingham.
Second.
Second, Ms. Wise. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. None opposed. Move on to the superintendent's report. Dr. Carson.
First of all, thank you. Appreciate the support. No one could script what's happened in the last 3 or 4 months. And everybody in this room has worked hard to do the best they possibly can to help our children. So I want to say thank you to you. I'd like to say that the adventure is coming to an end, but I can't say that. And they say the saga continues, and it's going to continue. And we're going to continue to do the best we can and try to make the best possible decisions that we can going forward. So one of the ways that we would like to do that, and I've asked Dr. Oliphant, I believe she'll make an introduction, to talk about the initiation of a technical reading and writing program in the school district and what our intention is moving forward. Dr. Oliphant.
Very much.
And Dr. Oliphant, before you start, my apologies. Again, these microphones are not for amplification. These are listening microphones. Okay. And Mr. Athey, this is recording. Everything is being said that we can meet our requirements for uploading of the minutes. But thank you.
Thank you. We just briefly like to talk about change in the direction of a program that was established last year. I bring to you Susan Sutton. Susan Sutton is our reading specialist here at the high... Huh? Yes, you can. Is our reading specialist here at the high school. Last year, she was hired as a reading specialist, and during their time here last year, she met with small groups of students who had reading deficiencies. And that's what reading specialists are trained to do, to help people, students, adults, who have reading deficiencies. One of the areas of my background is literacy and capping out a literacy program, a reading, writing, listening, speaking program with us in a school environment. And when I learned more about what Susan was doing, I went to her, and I also went to Dr. Denby, and I also had a conversation with one of the instructional coaches about the kinds of work that Susan was doing. And in that conversation, I proposed that we alter somewhat what she was going to do. And essentially, we are going to be asking her to go into the CTE classes, within those classes, and work with the CTE teachers to bolster students' reading and writing in their CTE programs. I think Susan will certainly show you in a minute the kinds of text that our students have to read. And traditionally, if we have fallen down with our students and not done as well, it has been more in their certification areas, not in the hands-on work that they do, but when they have to tackle text or write about text, that is the area in which they have more problems. And Susan is a person by training and background that can help us, and I think her impact in going into the CTE classes, working with the CTE teachers, while also working with the youngsters, will improve the quality of what's going on in the CTE classes. So I'd like to turn it over to Susan, and I'd like to have her talk to you about what she plans to do.
Thank you very much,
Dr. Oliphant. Hi, everybody. Very nice to be here with all of you. I started last year, and we weren't quite sure what direction we were going to go in. So as Dr. Oliphant said, we went to small groups, and we pulled the kids from classes as much as we could. I also work with the special ed teachers, and been kind of flexible. Wherever they need me, I try to go to. But this initiative by Dr. Oliphant is, not only is it timely, but it's also appropriate for right now, because a lot of the employers are responding that they're having difficulty finding young workers, new entry-level workers, who can speak and read and write at the level that they want, and also interpret some very complex, high-level, difficult texts. So what are we doing here? Academically, are we doing it for our college-bound students? And are we doing it for our CTE students? Well, we found that not only is going into the CTE a different idea, but it's not that different at all, because it's really something that's on the cutting edge right now. Literacy being taught through the CTE, and most students taking the CTE class now in high school, is where we're going to focus at this point. So what I did, I gave you all a sample of an auto body text. The kids have textbooks in most of the CTE classes, and some of them, I'm investigating all this, but some of them have online learning, and it is reading, reading, reading. And so what I hope to do, and even in my small classes, what I do is I try to change their idea of reading and toward reading. Rather than a chore, I try to tell them it's a skill that they have. It's something you can use. And it's valuable to you, so let's develop it. So NCT, this is an example. What you have is how it comes. If they get it on paper, they get it on paper. But if they, this way, if it's printed out, which is what I would suggest, if they could do that for each chapter or somewhat like that, close reading is something that you've heard about probably, where you're looking at the text, you're spending extra time with it, you're writing in the margins, all those things. You're really dissecting the text. This is what happened after I got to it. Highlighting, writing, okay? Finding all the vocabulary words, oh my goodness. Questions, if you want to go to the back and kind of just put up those questions. The questions are even high level. We're talking about the reading level of most of these textbooks is between 1300 and 1500 on a lexile level, but that's the difficulty level. And what we have in high school is about between 10 and 11 in most of our classes, 1100. So we're not really even hitting this level.
And so, could you explain what lexile level is?
Lexile is a scoring type of mechanism where you take the difficulty, you take a text and you measure sentence length, vocabulary words, structure, all those things, and you come up with a number. And every grade has a certain level that they're on. These books are above the secondary level. Yes.
Basically, it describes the level of difficulty when it comes to reading. Mm-hmm. So when the Sutton is saying level 15 and 13, that's outside of high school. Mm-hmm. That's more or less community college. Just to give you a perspective of what she's
Thank
trying
you.
To
Yeah, explain. I'm sorry if I didn't make that clear. But yeah, and so the level of our CTE books is way up there, basically. Mm-hmm. So they need help. And I feel like that they're probably just glancing over the stuff and just paying attention to the hands-on. They're not really studying this, and this is why we might not be doing well on our tests. Mm. So what I gave you here is what it's. I'm very big on front-loading information, so to speak. Okay, front-loading the vocabulary, front-loading the familiarity with the text. So this basically goes through. Where the students would take these vocabulary words. First, you're going to go do a text walk, and I would show this to teach you a text walk or a chapter walk, where we go through and we highlight every one of these vocabulary words and every one of the headings. So we know what's the roadmap, where are we starting, where are we trying to get. Okay. So you need to see where you need to get to and then how you're going to get there. And that's basically why we break down the chapter the way we do. And then this is a list, group, and label. And all the vocabulary words we listed here, they would list all of the sections here and all of the words where they meet. Where would they meet? Into the intro or into the standards or into the inspection. All the steps for your surface preparation of a vehicle to fix it. So. That's basically one of the examples that I would teach the teachers who spend time immediately front-loading all of the vocabulary and the structure of your text. And then I think you'll see some scores go way up.
So you're going to teach the teachers how to put these essentially, I guess, bullet points and pull this out of the, they're pulling it out of their chapters to get that so the kids can.
I would model it to them first. So I'd say,
so she'd go into the classroom. Mm-hmm. And she'd kind of take over the class for the teacher and do it with the students in the classroom. And over time, the various strategies that she would use, or teaching our teachers to use those same strategies.
I think it needs to be uniform,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And to try to make those uniform across the school. One of the things we know, because research tells us, that if we can find a series of strategies, whether it's in literacy, whether it's in mathematics, mm-hmm. and we teach those across the school, and everybody's using them, we'll raise the level of performance within the school. Again, CTE teachers, they're wonderful at their trade. They know their trade, mm-hmm. and they know their craft, but sometimes when it comes to teaching what's in the book, they haven't been trained as a reading specialist has been trained. So that's where we're wanting to take this.
I'll leave.
I myself tried to understand this chapter. I have no experience in auto body. It took me a while. I had to sit down and really break it down. And I think that, but before I even read the entire thing, I was extremely familiar with all the terms, where they would be in the chapter, you know, so that like my studying would be easier. So that's it. Any questions, please?
Yes. If the quality of this is level 15, are there better textbooks that we can get at level, you know, 10 or 12?
I don't know that. I've seen most of
one, them. One of the problems is that many of these are geared
right.
to what they're going
CTE.
To take
right.
on the certification tests.
Right.
So,
right. The questions in the back.
If they're going to have to do certain kinds of things on the certification tests, and they're in certain vocabulary and certain language and structured a certain way, then we need to be teaching the students that same thing,
right.
not teaching them something different.
Well, the question is whether we can teach them the same thing, but at their level, my question.
Well,
the other thing, are you getting any blowback from teachers? Because I hear all the time, you know, we've got so much material, we can't add anything else, which I don't agree with in a business of classes on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like AP Biology, AP Environmental Science.
Mm-hmm.
So are you getting any blowback from teachers saying, we don't have time for this? I mean, it's very important.
I'm sure we will. I haven't gotten
she's
not, it.
They've not presented to the teachers yet. She's presenting it to say what
well,
the, she
us,
thinks
okay,
they can help
so
us.
You haven't, okay.
So we have a plan for the presentation, too, in terms of some groups know about it, but we're going to also begin. We have a group called Instructional Coaches, and that group meets with Dr. Denby and with me and the other administrators fairly often. And so Susan is going to become a part of the Instructional Coach group, so we're going to approach it that way
yeah.
and talk with the Instructional Coaches, who are really the teacher leaders in the school. The second step then will also be to go to the CTE teachers and meet with them and say, hey, here's something that we're thinking about. What do you think about it? What's going to be most helpful to you? Talk to us about your text. So we would then meet with those people. And I predict they're going to be very, very receptive to having someone come in and help them, and then help thereby helping their students.
I think it's a good idea. And the other problem I have, like, was it's not a problem, but what percent, and you don't have to answer this, but what percent of our students actually end up going into a CTE program? It may be 30, it may be 20, I'm not sure, it's low. So my point is the technical reading here is gonna help even the ones who go to college and go to every other program, because you're gonna need technical reading anywhere you go.
Well, and all students here take technical courses. Every
no, I know.
Student.
That's my point. Everybody takes it. But you know, the kids don't follow through, is my impression, after graduation.
Right. It isn't just the technical things. It's entry-level workplace.
Yes.
There's much higher level reading.
Yes.
So our kids aren't ready. There's a gap.
Yes.
And that's been, you know,
sure.
it's been researched.
Sure.
But one thing I think, you know, in terms of why we're using these texts, as you said about being prepared for the test, we prepare our kids for the SAT. We practice SAT tests. We practice how to answer all these different kinds of questions and what to look for. They don't have that advantage for these tests. So if we teach them through these questions and, hey, this is how you find that answer, there are some techniques that could be taught here.
It's just like going, for me, it's the same as going to take your driver's test. Well, you've got to pass your driver's test if you want to get a license. So what do? You teach from the manual and you teach them. Or if you're going to be a lawyer, you've got to go take the bar exam and you've got to pass all those questions that a lawyer has asked or a doctor has asked. So
we're
hopeful that
we have a number of different applications here. Thank you for your work in terms of getting in. And Dr. Mastin, I agree. I think this is a life skill, regardless of your field of endeavor, which mm-hmm. is appreciated. And remember, we started at the beginning of the meeting saying we want to help our students be successful. And so our thinking is that by helping our teachers to help our students with the reading and writing process, technical reading and writing, which is You know, we used to be able to change a spark plug and set a gap, and I can't even, there isn't a spark plug anymore, so that's how old I am.
But if you had to explain that in words, that's the tough part. Do you understand enough that, because that's where the kids are having trouble.
And the other factor in deviation that we have is that because we enroll ninth graders, it doesn't mean that ninth graders are at a ninth grade reading level. And so, you know, we, you have to manage that process to still allow for success, but in some cases, we have to go back. And the great thing about it is that we have students who are motivated for technical areas. Well, it's the age-old question, right? Why do I have to take mathematics? Why do I have to know this reading process? Because it's going to help you be a better auto mechanic or a dental technician or the programs that we have, and we're going to teach you mathematics that applies to carpentry. Mm-hmm. And so now you've got that internal motivation on the part of a student, you know, instead of the answer, you need to take it because I had to take it. And, you know, that usually doesn't work too well. So.
And if I could just say one more thing, things that I'm being hearing in the literacy cadre that I go to, is they don't want you to bring the text down. They want you to, for
sure.
equity's sake, everyone see a high-level text and be scaffolded and helped. So that's what this is about, really bringing it down.
Well, how are you going to make it fun?
Well, right now, you know, I thought of something for that. Since we're learning remotely, I've been experimenting with breakout rooms in the Zooms. I don't know if any of you have had to go into a breakout room or anything, but it groups the kids into twos or threes or fours, and they go and work on things together interactively. This is really hard to do right now, but that's one way that instead of just saying, here's what you do, this is a student-driven activity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you give them the example, you show them how to do it, and then they do it and collaborate, talk together about, oh, I didn't know that, those three words went together, why don't they have an alphabet, you know, something like that. So then we can share together. So breakout rooms right now is one of our biggest ways to make things fun and making cahoots and games and things like that. And I know the CTE teachers don't have time for that stuff, but it's changed something else out and put this in, you know, in my work. So thank you for listening, everyone.
Just one other little piece when it comes to the fun part. What this is going to do for our students is really a mindset shift. We're teaching them with skills so their confidence when they go into those high stakes exams, things like that, will be at a much greater level. So as you can see, as Ms. Sutton presents it, it's totally presented as a benefit to help you do better in your whole life, not just in your CTE area. It's going to give you more confidence across your life. So you've heard the question, or you maybe with your own children, when am I ever going to use this? Right?
Sure.
So by teaching a skill around reading in that CTE area, you take the joy in that area and teach them that skill. When you marry those two together, it's a mindset shift that creates a level of confidence where not only are we preparing students for certain jobs, we're really preparing a better employee for the employers because they had their confidence, literacy confidence to do what they're asked to do.
And we present it that way to the teachers, too. This is a help. This is a benefit.
It's a total help. And you know what? To that point, technical teachers get basically graded, and the school gets graded on how many students actually pass those certification exams. So when we bring someone in that's specified to teach this skill, it benefits everybody.
Yeah.
This is a win-win-win situation.
But what I'm getting at, for example, my wife is best reader, most knowledgeable person I've ever known in my life. But our grandkids don't like to read. And one point she makes, if you wanted to enjoy reading, don't give them to read Chaucer.
No.
You know, something they just can't understand. Give them to fun read first and then get them into it. So that's my point here, you know, how do you get fun reading into this?
Yeah, well, you know what? It's a life lesson because it's not fun to read that stuff at work. But you have to be able to do it. That's
and the other, but
it.
The other question is, how do you teach myself? I do not enjoy reading, and the reason I do not is I want to memorize every single word, every single paragraph, technically. Okay. Now my wife, on the other hand, skims through. She can finish a novel, you know, in a few days. You know, so how do you, what do you teach there? Are you teaching skimming? Are you teaching technical reading? Is there any difference?
Yeah, I mean, skimming is something you use as a pre-reading strategy. You skim over, we do a walk through the text to see what it looks like.
If.
But you have different structures, of, you have different expectations for different things that you're going to read. And you set your mind to that. Okay, if I'm reading a novel, I'm going to curl up on the couch and enjoy it, and I don't care if I don't understand every word. I'll get the gist of it, you know, and I'll enjoy it. But if I have to read something for work, I have to be able to focus. And it's funny because I started the school year with a video that showed the kids some research on the fact that consistent reading has an effect on your brain. It helps you to be able to do longer tasks, linear tasks, where you need more of your attention span. It helps you to do that for a longer time if you read regularly. Because we're constantly context switching. We're switching here. I'm going to read this little quote for a minute. I'm going to go to my social media for a second. Or I'm going to look at my Spanish for a minute. No, you need to be able to spend a little closer time. So it's something that it develops your brain as well. But, you know, there are ways to teach it. And you have to be able to set your mind for whatever the task is, the type of task is. And I teach that. So.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
you're welcome.
You.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next, under superintendent's report, COVID update. Wish I had really great news. I don't. The board has been given a chart showing our linear progression since August 24th, and the simple fact of the matter is that in every zip code throughout Sussex County, the numbers continue to get worse. And that's an important factor because we make decisions based upon student and staff safety. We've made a recommendation regarding second marking period. It's been a real interesting process. I mean, the board has received numerous communications, I'm sure, from parents and community members about opening up school and let's bring students back to school. And we have districts that are working remotely. We have hybrid and different forms of hybrid, single day, one day, two day types of arrangements. But unfortunately, what's happening is that the spread of COVID in close quarters with more and more students is causing a spike in the number of cases that we have. This afternoon on Delaware Online, two elementary schools in Newcastle County were closed down today and have a 14-day quarantine. The disease got into staff, and they simply weren't able to have school. And so the irony of it is today was the day they were scheduled to open. And so before children even arrived at the facility, they've had to close two of them down. So it's disappointing. It's disheartening. It is certainly a major social issue. And we continue to make decisions based upon this. This afternoon, I received two letters from parents about the way that we, our decisions regarding remote learning. I certainly won't read the letters to you completely, but basically to say that they're disappointed that we are remote and that they wish that their children were in school and participating in programs and CTE, and so do we. We all want our students in here. We want them in front of our teachers. We want them learning reading skills and everything else that is our school. That's a wonderful, wonderful thing for students. But we have to make those decisions going forward. Later under district update, I'm going to talk to you about some plans regarding second marking period and what we intend to do in order to provide more instruction in terms of a face-to-face availability for students going into the second marking period, some increasing of some visitation opportunities for students to come to school. I'm nervous about it because it's, quite frankly, it's counterintuitive to me that the numbers are getting worse and we're making decisions about increasing the risk level, in my mind, about student exposure in that type of situation. And, you know, this has been a 55-45 question since the summer, and it continues to be. But our numbers, and in particular in Sussex County, are not doing well. I would say for the record that one of the benchmarks through DPH is a topic called hospitalizations. And hospitalizations are increasing. But we also have three hospitals in Sussex County. Kent County has one hospital. And so if you take it literally and quantitatively, if you're across that middle band of the state, would you go to the hospital at Bay Health Milford? And if you go to Bay Health Milford, you're going to be counted in the Sussex County numbers. I'm not rationalizing the Sussex increase because it's real, but I think public health is also learning about messaging and decision making through that process. But we sympathize with our parents, we sympathize with our students. We're trying to do the best we can in the safest possible manner to keep students engaged with our school and our system. I mean, you heard an example with reading last month. You heard from two teachers doing the best they can to, and we continue to improve student engagement, but it's engagement through technology. And if you're prone to that type of a learning style, life is good, and you're able to do it. If you're like me, and you want to bang nails or take a sledge to something or those types of things, I can't do that when I'm. I mean, I can. But the point is that there's different types of learning for different students, and we're doing some amazing creative work. Our teachers are doing great things for folks, but the frustration level continues to rise, not only with the situation, but the fact that a significant number of our students and community members don't feel that the access to the school is as great as it should be. And again, I would be cautious and I would exercise patience, and we'll continue to monitor these numbers as we go forward.
I think as a board, or at least I'll speak for myself, we agree. We want the kids back in school.
Yeah.
But what's safe for everybody?
Yeah, I've had more parents and staff contact me about wanting to be in here full time. And maybe two or three that have contacted said that they're glad that, you know, that kids aren't allowed to come at all. So I mean, it's a mixed bag when you're in the community. And like you said, you don't want to expose our kids or our staff to be unsafe.
No, and there's different, you know, there's different categories that we have to look at. If you're talking about elementary school or kids in school, they probably are okay, even if they get COVID. But the problem is, they take it home.
You're right.
And then the grandparents and the other people at home are not okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's not, you know, it's a two-edged sword.
And Dr. Masson, you raise a good point, and I certainly don't want to be generalized across the board, but our cases or our positive tests have come from outside of school, not in school, and I want to say that publicly. Mm-hmm. We're responsible for about 30% of a person's day. You know, the other 70% is what do you do when you're not in school, and how, what situations have you put yourself in that allow an exposure to take place? And we can advise social distance, wear your mask, hand sanitation. You know, we do all of those things. I'm proud of our protocols. I think we do what's necessary to keep our staff, you know, as safe as possible. But the event has come into school. When it comes into school, you have close contact. Rules kick in play, and we have to quarantine. It's that simple. And you're right, sir. This person goes home and takes it to this person that takes it to this person, and before you know, you've got a pretty long line of folks that have to be in a quarantine situation. So we'll keep you apprised weekly about where we are regarding COVID and go from there. Item C under my report is the second reading of the temporary student attendance policy. Given the circumstances of COVID-19, it's policy JEA. This is second reading for tonight under agenda action that prescribes attendance and how our requirements for monitoring of attendance, teacher responsibility. We had some discussion at last month's meeting during public commentary and others. We think those issues have been resolved, and that there's a clearer understanding about what everyone's responsibility is in terms of monitoring of attendance, student attendance, and going forward. I've said this to the staff ad nauseum, and I will say it again. We should have every reasonable expectation that there'll be an audit at some point in time regarding student attendance. There just seems to be constant communication about student attendance. Next, this week is the finalization of unit count, Ms. Jenkins. And that's important to all of us in terms of, so we want to be sure regarding attendance and student participation in order to qualify for the units. Number one, we want to make sure that we have students engaged. Number two, on the financial side, we want to make sure we get our unit money so that we can continue to run our operations. So that will be on your agenda for agenda item later. Revision of the 2021 district calendar is the, you remember the deal with the song where you follow the bouncing ball? Our calendar seems to be that type of an event. The calendar version that you have as part of your packet tonight removed return day from being a in-school day, added on the day at the end of the year for teachers. We made it also impacted by a day, the last student day. So everything we believe is as it should be regarding the student calendar, barring any other complications, but we believe it is correct. Item E, the board is familiar with District Teacher of the Year, and we're certainly proud of Kelly Gerke for being named our District Teacher of the Year and participating in that process. There is also an Education Support Professional of the Year program, and each district nominates a support professional to compete or to be recognized on a statewide basis. Our district nominated Phil Thompson, he and his staff. Phil Wilson. Well, that's scary. If you know Phil Thompson, you'd be very scared. But Phil Wilson is, he and his staff run our technology department, do a great, great job of keeping all that we have functioning and moving forward. We're proud of Phil and his work, and when we're able to gather, we will certainly more publicly recognize Ms. Gerke and Phil for their accomplishments and for being nominated on behalf of the district. Under district report, some items for you. I need to publicly inform you that our certificate of necessity request was rejected by the Delaware Department of Education. There wasn't a long list of reasons other than to say that the only criteria that the state was using to determine who received CN money was the use of the word capacity. And the word capacity meaning that you have X amount of square footage, and we have a lot of square footage, and that you have to be significantly oversubscribed in terms of student enrollment in order to be considered eligible to receive a CN. Obviously, we have concern with that line of policy and decision-making, because the maintenance and/or maintaining of a building is excluded from consideration from the CN process. We find that to be poor policy. I'll put it in that regard. The other thing that, and I'm sure Mr. Reed will have a comment, I mean, we also spent resources and time to prepare a document that we were told would be the form that would be considered in terms of how we approached our CN. We even threw in a new school just for good measure on top of that, and that did not have an impact going forward. I will say that we did receive legislative letters of support from Senator Hocker, from Representative Dukes, and Representative Short in support of our RCN program going forward. We were not the only school district to be rejected, but obviously we were not on the on the side that counts in terms of acquiring these dollars. We are extremely disappointed. We felt that our program and the work that had been done was very well done, quite frankly, mm-hmm. and that it checked off the boxes that were necessary regarding the CN. Mr. Reed, any other comments?
Yeah. The one thing I got out of the denial of CN and talking to person who led the committee, talking to Secretary Bunning, talking to John Sheehan, the governor's assistant, was that they are encouraging Sussex Tech to increase their enrollment because they denied us based on capacity. Capacity to me means students in the school, so it's telling me that we need to get more students here. I asked them numerous times, are you saying we should increase capacity? And they never told me not to do that. And so I think as the lottery approaches, we're going to take a look at what we can do as a school, and we're going to move in that direction. We were encouraged. I was encouraged. Steve Guthrie sitting in the office of DOE to present the way we presented, and we spent a lot of resources for nothing. A lot of time. I mean, I personally have a lot of time in it. And it was disappointing. I let them know that, and they give money to Milford, but everything else was Smyrna North. So Sussex County didn't get any. I don't know if you consider Milford Sussex County or not, but no money came south, and we're in need. We got some things here that need to be addressed. So it's I think as we move forward, me being a board member, I'm going to encourage our board as we look at the lottery and, through Dr. Carson, Dr. Denby, what we can do with the staff we have and our current facilities and what we can do to increase our enrollment. One, we had 800 plus applications. There's some people that want to come to school here. It's a good school. We got great staff. We got a great environment. I don't know why we shouldn't utilize that. And, I will be encouraging that moving forward.
So how many students do we have at the present time?
I'm going to tell you 1,260.
Okay. And is there any limit on the upper limit anymore?
Well,
1,550 is our number, right?
At one time, we had 1,541, and one time being 2014. The problem with not all square footage, sure, is usable square footage, so I need to make that statement. The other challenge is that, and this is the irony, and this is why I believe it's bad policy, and you said so. Over in the district office hangs a picture of our facility. At the time, it was called Sussex Votech. And surrounding the facility in that picture are 17 modular classrooms. I don't know the date of the picture, but my guess is it's could be, you know, at a point in time, and I'm thinking to myself, quite frankly, do you mean that we have to put in 17 modular classrooms in order to paint a picture that says that we have a capacity problem? Because that's essentially what we were told. And modular classrooms are a waste of money. They're usable space, and every time I've recommended them, I grit my teeth, because to set them up and the costs associated with them, the utility, the fact that you're taking students outside again in a capacity, just doesn't seem to be a logical solution to the fact that we have an HVAC problem. We have roofing issues. We have other issues within the building that are considered fundamental maintenance. But you're telling me the only way that I can address fundamental maintenance is if I enroll, if I go from 1,200 to 1,600. That seems illogical to me. So.
And we were encouraged to submit again. And I said, is there going to be a capacity issue next year? She said, more than likely. But you need to submit again. And I said, I'm having trouble understanding it. Because you're telling us to spend, you know, 50 grand preparing documents.
Well,
plus time.
We'll take the white out.
You're asking us to submit all this stuff, but yet you're telling me you're not going to approve it. So I said, why should we waste our time and waste the district's time? You know, it's that seems ridiculous to me, but, yeah. You know, I don't know that I understand that process. And so it's, you know, it, to me, you know, they created, you know, false hope. And the truth is, I think they're, you know, DOE has done a disservice to our taxpaying dollars. And I told them it's a shame that they didn't fund this. You know, and when I went and met at that room that day, ironically, I looked around a table of about 10 of us. And, you know, I'm a volunteer board member, the only one there not getting paid, and everybody, you know, it's disappointing that that's the way they look at it. It's, they didn't take a look at our roof issues, HVAC, parking, the traffic, trying to get your kids in and out of here every day. They didn't look at any of that. They just said, no capacity. They slid it over. So.
But we can increase capacity.
We can.
Without a tax rate increase.
We can add students.
But we can't support the staff that we need with the current taxes that we have available.
So then they told me we need to go back to our legislators.
Yeah.
And they've proven in the last 3 or 4 years that they're not going to do anything either. So, I mean,
we're in a catch-22.
Yeah, you're in a tough spot.
Chase
on tail. Yeah, you really are. It's a tough deal because, you know, increase enrollment, you got to increase tax base. Legislators aren't going to give us any more tax money. You get a building, we got to be at capacity, but we can't increase capacity without a tax increase. So the taxpayers in Sussex County, if they listen to this, should be disappointed in this process. It's an absolute shame that this is the way the DOE is handling our tax money.
Or our kids.
I mean, just to fund our kids, the environment for our, you know, it's affecting business here for generations by not investing in this building for workers coming out of here. I mean, it's changing futures. Our kids are leaving here and leaving this area where they could be trained and not leave. And that's a shame to see them leave here. So that's all I'm going to say about CN, Dr. Carson.
Yes, sir. The I wanted to commend the athletic programs and regarding, and we talked about COVID. We've had events here at school. We did have a home football game. We had senior night. We've had soccer matches. Football's back on track tomorrow. Field hockey's back on track Wednesday. But to Athletic Director Pagalo and Ethan Long and administrative staff at the building level, I want to say thank you. Again, precautions, people doing what they're supposed to do at events. We've had a good experience with folks understanding the situation. None of it, again, is as everybody would like it to be, but we're holding events, volleyball games. I mean, we've had a number of different events, and folks are cooperating. Believe it or not, at the end of the month, we've got winter sports that will also be starting up. and commencing at the at a future board meeting. The board's going to receive the winter coaching positions. But the point of the matter is that there's good communication, good process. Maintenance staff is working well with everyone also. So thank you for that. I mentioned second marking period, which, believe it or not, starts Monday, a week from today. Hard to believe, right? We're looking at making some adjustments to the current schedule. And again, in conversation and consultation with the instructional coaches, Dr. Denby and his team, Dr. Oliphant, and others have been working on ways to address the parental concerns that we've heard regarding remote learning. Now, we're still remote learning, but how could we improve the quality, or quite frankly, the face-to-face, I'm going to use the word synchronous, time where the teacher is in front of the student, and we're going to be expanding that time for teachers to have that face-to-face time. And perfectly honest with you, some of this request came from the teachers themselves. They wanted that additional synchronous time. And so when you add in the synchronous, you reduce on the asynchronous. And so the board will be getting a copy of a revision of a schedule. We're also going to be doing a communications plan for parents and for students about how things will shift and transition going into next week, so that we make sure we keep people involved with that process in what's going on. Again, is it what everybody wants? Absolutely not. Do we think it's better second marking period than it was first marking period? We do. And it's a continuation of the march towards, hopefully, if the numbers let us, to have a safe hybrid situation, and then continuation of that into a full open. And you know, our goal is to have a full open, and you know, the sooner the better. Mm-hmm. We'll see. My colleagues in the other districts, we Zoom a couple times a month or a week. We're concerned, and today that is an example, we're concerned about the weather, we're concerned about Thanksgiving, we're concerned about December. Mm-hmm. And where these numbers are going to go, and whether we're able to offer services, and in what capacity we're able to offer services. We're a lot closer to red than we are green, and that's problematic for everybody along the way. But if we go red, I will tell you that your school district is red, is in a good position to accommodate that remote type of instruction going forward. I'll keep you posted on that. In addition, we are looking at, again, Dr. Denby and his team, Dr. Oliphant, on something called a visitation day to allow grade level visitation to the school system, to the campus, that would allow fundamental introductions and questions, and we need to get your picture taken for the yearbook, and you know, time moves on. But you know, we're looking at starting that, could be as soon as next week. And again, teachers are involved in the discussion process. We are not calling it a hybrid day. We are calling it a visitation day. But we will be doing that for grades 9, 10, and 11. We have ninth graders who haven't been here. And you know, they're going through cycles, ninth grade exploratory cycles, and they need to have that conversation. They need to, in our opinion, put foot on campus. But in doing so, we have to do it in the safest possible manner. We'll probably take a class and divide it into thirds. When I say a class, sophomore class, 300 and some students. Well, three groups of 100 and some coming in on any particular day, so that we can manage students coming into the building and doing that process. We'll be communicating more to you about that process also, because that also feeds into the discussion point. Mr. Reed mentioned applications. We also have eighth graders who are making decisions about where they want to go to school next year, and making application, and the ability to learn more about Sussex Tech, either through technology or some type of a visitation, is a goal that we have, so that they can also get an idea of what's going on in their county technical high school, and to make an informed decision about what they might want to do for next year also. So it's not just current students, it is current students, but it's also next year's freshman class. I mean, it's November the 9th, folks, and, you know, days keep coming and going, and you know, COVID doesn't have a clock. So we're going to continue to do the best we can to meet the needs of our students and families in that regard also. And then finish with that one. We've also been informed that the state budgetary process is looking at the potential of an $82 million reduction to public education. And we hope that they don't have to get to the $82 million, but there's a laundry list of places where the state would be recommending cuts to the General Assembly. Most of them we don't agree with, other than to the Department of Ed. We're keeping our eyes on the dollars and what the recommendations would be. The good news was that the October DFAC number was better than originally thought, so that helps. The governor will take November numbers, that's probably next Monday, that the budget office will receive that information, and the governor will use that to help craft his budget presentation, which typically comes the third week of January. I would also inform you that the state director of the budget, Office of Management and Budget, Mike Jackson, is leaving his post as the director of Office of Management and Budget, and is going to Delaware Technical and Community College, I assume in some type of financial capacity. The current Secretary of Labor, a gentleman by the name of Saron Cade, will be assuming the responsibilities of the budget director for the state, and one of Secretary Cade's lieutenants will be recommended for approval to be the new Secretary of Labor. So there's a lot of movement in terms of administrative positions within the administration of the governor. We'll see how that plays out for us going forward, but I did want to keep you informed of that. And then finally, on the personnel agenda tonight, Mr. Reed mentioned a retirement. That gentleman is DJ Porcucci, and I wanted to publicly thank DJ for he's got almost 30 years of service in with our school district. He's been an excellent English teacher, done great work, and we want to congratulate him on all of his work that he's done. I want to thank him for his service, wish him all the best in his retirement, which will take place this month. So, that's all I have, sir.
All right. We're going to move on to the board report. Truancy Court, Ms. Jones.
Hi. At the last board meeting, a teacher had spoken about attendance, and I made some comments about truancy. And I know Mr. Reed had said to me on the way out he wasn't aware of some things. So I spent a little time doing some research and so on, and it just asked to be put on the board agenda. I didn't know it was going to be on me, kind of thing.
Well,
but
I don't know anything about it. So unless there's someone else that wants to report on it.
No, I mean, I've got stuff that I've done today, but like I said, I just wanted to discuss truancy here. Like I said, it became a concern of mine in 2009 when I became a visiting teacher for the Indian River School District, because Sussex Tech was not on the truancy calendar. Every other school district in Sussex County was.
But I think we are now, right?
No.
We're not on the calendar?
No.
We are, Mr. Morrow.
No, you can... you're put on with somebody else, but your actual district is not listed on the truancy calendar. But you are put on the days with, I think, Laurel and Delmar.
So what I, real quick, so what I'm saying is, we're not doing things right. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying.
Because I don't believe that to be true. And that's what it's being insinuated. So I don't know if Dr. Demby or Mr. Marwa, I'm assuming they're doing it right because we do. I just want to make sure because I don't want it to be insinuated that we're not doing it.
Well, I'll say it this way and then I'll be quiet.
No, I'm asking you to do it because I want to get it out on the table because I don't want anyone to think that we're not doing it right because I believe we are.
I'll give you the facts. The two banners there in our commons area, we got exceeding expectations 2 years in a row. Attendance is a part of the mechanism to get to that point.
Okay.
So when we're different, and I don't mean to sound disrespectful, but we're not the other districts in Sussex County. They are multi-school districts. They have K through 12. We have one level. So they're going to have more cases around attendance than we would ever have.
But we're going to court, right?
We need to. And Mr. Marwa has examples of when he went to court and what he was told.
Okay.
As well, I'll be quiet and let Mr. Marwa speak or Ms. Jones finish her concern.
I just want to make sure that we
Well, and this is, like I said, this was back when I became a truancy officer in 2009 and when I retired in 2016, it still wasn't. Like I said, I had a 8th grader at Sylvieville Middle School that I had filed truancy charges on, and I know sometimes they don't go to our building, so I knew all the other visiting teachers in Sussex County and who to pass the case file on, and I had to call here to see who did I pass the case file to. And I know there's an organization called DAVT, Delaware Association of Visiting Teachers, that meet once a month, and I know most of the also visiting teachers in Kent and Newcastle County through that. And like I said, and over the year, I've got a lot of friends here, former colleagues, former students, and so on and so forth. And they've, said to me, kids miss 20, 30 days. Why isn't anything being done? And I said, I don't know. You've got to check your attendance policy and so on and so forth. I know one of the things I did in e-schools is there was the Indian River School District made a place where I could put when I made a parent phone call, when I sent the 5-day letter home, when I sent the 10-day letter home, when I sent the letter of prosecution, when I filed truancy charges, when I denied credit, and that teachers could look at that and see where, if Joe is not coming to class, they could look and see what I had done. So that may help if, that capability is here for Sussex Tech so that staff knows what's happened. I know attendance was mentioned, like I said, in a school board meeting, I think during my first year, and I said that I would look at the attendance policy, and I was told the policy was good and that not any changes need to be made. Like I said, at the last board meeting, a teacher brought up about it, and so Sussex Tech is still not on the truancy court calendar. Yes, when they make file charges, they put them on the days then Laurel and Delmar are scheduled, but there's actually... Most districts have one day. Well, Indian River, we had 3 days, but there's days that certain districts go to court. But they do make allowances that they are put on the day, I think they said, when Laurel and Seaford. Currently, there are no open cases for Sussex Tech and truancy court.
That's a good thing, right?
Yes and no. Let me go back. For truancy court, once truancy charges are filed, most judges, truancy judges, like to have 3 good case reviews before dismissing the charges. And usually what they'll do is meet with the parents and the kid every couple months, and the visiting teacher brings in the attendance, and if things are looking good after 3 good case reviews, they'll dismiss the charges. Hopefully that happens. A lot of times I was in truancy court with the same kid and the same group of parents for years. So it depends, but it can last several years. And with today's remote learning, I think it's even a harder job trying to do attendance and keep track of what the kids are doing and so forth and so on. I know teachers have said to me that the kids don't have to turn their video on and they don't have to turn their microphone on, so they have to log in, but who knows if they're staying for the whole lesson, and that the teachers have... chats and stuff, and the students aren't even answering the chats. And when you have, I don't know if you're familiar, when you have chats in Zoom, you can do to the whole group, or you can do to a certain individual, and they will do to these individuals and the students. But they've had mark present because they did log in. So that is. Now, as far as, I agree, you only have one building, but Delmar only has one building too, Delmar Junior Senior High School. They only have one building.
But I think we're, when you get, we'll let Dr. or Mr. Marvel speak on, if he doesn't mind, on our truancy. We may not need as many days.
Right, no, 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 I agree, I agree.
I don't know that they should supply us a day if we don't need, if we don't need a day, right?
Like they, like, what they'll do is just share days.
Is there something wrong with that?
No, 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 not at all. But I'm saying Laura and Delmar.
But you were saying earlier you wanted to see us on the calendar for truancy.
Laura and Delmar have a shared day kind of thing.
So we can't share with somebody else if we only have a couple?
Yes, well, you can, but what I'm saying, the calendar just put out in advance that these are your days. So I'm just saying, when the calendar was put out this year, Sussex Tech was not on there.
I would, unless Dr. or Dr. Demby or Mr. Marvel tell me something different, that sounds to me like a great thing.
Yeah.
So, you want me to?
Please do, go to the mic, yeah, because, yeah, I'd like for it to be, so everybody can hear it. You take that off.
All right, so first of all, I appreciate the inquiry, definitely. And I'll try to track down why I think we're rarely in truancy court. One of the things I also do as a preacher, and sometimes people in the congregation will say, you went down a few rabbit holes today, so hopefully I won't go down any rabbit holes. But if I am confusing, I want you to know, hey, please come in and talk to me, not only to try and see what we're doing, but to use your experience that might help us do things better.
I will be glad to. That's not a problem. I'm retired.
Well, we know each other.
Like 5 part-time, non-paying jobs, so that's not a problem.
So please come in, or anyone for that matter, to talk about it. So as I think through my own way, I think through why we're rarely in truancy court, rarely, starts with this. Number one, do we have individual students who have attendance problems? Yes, we do. Do we have an attendance issue in the school? No, we do not. Now, for me to say that, there would need to be a metric that I would look at. So I look at our graduation rates. And so at our graduation rates for the last 4 years that were measured, it wasn't measured in 2020, we exceeded 95% or higher, except for 1 year we were at 94.2. So when I look at that and I start to think, well, who matches us anywhere in the county? And the only school that matches us was Sussex Academy. So then I begin to think, and this is just me thinking out loud, what is the difference between us and the other schools? And it starts with a kid choosing to come. Mm-hmm. Every student that comes has either made a choice themselves, their parent made a choice for them, or the team decided to come. Mm-hmm. Now they come in, and what do they encounter? Just what Mr. Reed said. He's had 2 children here, a great environment with a great staff. There is a lot of love pushed out here that started right from day one when I mean, I look around, I'm the oldest guy in the room, I believe, and I was here from the beginning, and we had a definite plan of trying to create an environment that will want the students to come. I'm going to pause for a saying, now that part of that puzzle is now removed because they're not coming in. So I actually foresee our truancy going up in a remote, because one of our advantages is the environment. I believe, this is personal opinion, we have the safest environment of any school in the county.
I believe it's the safest.
Yes. And so when you look at our disciplinary referrals, they're astronomically low, and our physical altercations are very low. So we start with choice, we start with environment. And the next thing is commitment. Our interventions, so right from the beginning, and I span many a superintendent and many a principal, we've always had a restorative philosophy that is not compliance-based. You do this or you're out. But we're always trying to keep the student in school. And so we have a lot of interventions, and I could walk you through those, but I'm not going to take the time to do that, although I will mention right now you could look at eSchool, and I was glad to hear you did the same thing that I'm doing. I'm putting it in eSchool under the activities so that the teachers can go in there and look to see if I called home. Those things sit in there right now from previous years.
So we're reporting in eSchool. I just want to clarify that because, Ms. Jones, you made it seem like we were not reporting it.
I don't know.
The
teacher says the communication has been much better this year.
But have you been doing that?
Learning, but that's what I'm saying.
I just want to clarify on the record that, Mr. Marvel, our school has been doing there was a concern that a teacher said we were not.
So when we walked.
Tell Mr. Reed the example of what the judge said to you the last time you went to court for truancy.
Okay, so our last 2 times that we were in truancy court, we were in truancy court last year multiple times with the same student, and Ms. Jones is correct.
the judge will look at you and say, do you want to release them? You know, are you satisfied? Is everything as good? So we had a particular student in there, which when then we were commended by the effort that we were doing, when we were even trying to get the kid who was older than an actual ninth grader but hadn't advanced, offering, hey, we'll put you into a technical area, we'll do this, we'll change your schedule, we'll do whatever's necessary. And the judge's response was, you know, your school should be commended for you're willing to make this effort to make sure that the student comes to school. The other example was the previous year, I believe it was, we had a student who was going to turn 18 in the middle of November. So I come in September, you know what I'm getting ready to say, and I go to them and I say, we want to file truancy charges. And the people who are responsible are saying, why are you doing that, Mr. Marble? In the middle of November, the charges are going to be dropped. And I said, because this is our last chance to get that kid to come to school. Yeah. And he's going to be a dropout if we don't do this. When I get in front of the judge, they commended us for that. But to return to the rarity of it is that in that restorative process, it kind of works like this. We call out on any absent unexcused, just one. Mm-hmm. And all tardies and everything get a call home. And an email goes with that. And then at a certain threshold, I send out a letter, all right? Currently, it's 7 days that they would send out we would send out a letter. And then we have teachers calling, and we have guidance counselors all involved in that. But I think for me, and this is my thinking through, and I'm sure you're tracking with me, in order for me to take, I can't take anybody to truancy court. I don't have the authority. I always have to go to the building principal.
Administration. Mm-hmm.
And so then, check this out. We're so restorative that the building principal, and especially Dr. Demby, he takes it to the superintendent. I wonder to myself, what schools are truancy decisions being made at that level? Probably not many, simply because you guys have so much to do. We're just one school. And in that process, there's been times when I've been saying, hey, Mr. Marvel, will you continue to work with this kid? I think there's a chance we can get him back in. So we've got the choice, okay, and then we've got the environment. We've got the commitment to a restorative process where we have all these interventions. And then finally, choice comes back in again. So we want to comply with the law. Currently, the law has a 10, 15, and 20-day process. So you know the school district, the Learning Education Authority, has their idea. And then we have a state law that we got to comply with. Well, the state law then reads that when we decide that they're absent unexcused, when we decide that with a no turn back, okay, then now we have to follow the law. So we've got that 10, 15, and 20 process. But here's the thing, up until just a couple years ago, in our restorative philosophy, we allowed notes to come in at any point in time. We didn't have any stop gap to it. Does that make sense to you?
Well, that's one of my questions here, is there's 5 days, right, so that is enforced.
Right, so now what we did was, we noticed that was causing us some issues. We would have a kid who would go and have their wisdom teeth out. We knew they had it, and they had a medical note, but they didn't have really a support team to get it in here, so we would continue to work with that student. But we began to realize, and we sat down as a team, Dr. Sell at that point was the lead of that, and we decided we needed to put something in to give it a little bit of teeth. So we have a 5-day, and here's how that's enforced. If we believe there's no good excuse that you aren't getting your note in, then we have something in writing that says we can disqualify that note. And now that puts you into, you can't change that day. Mm-hmm. And so that makes a significant difference of how you get into truancy court. And then finally, that last piece is choice. So now, because of those processes, you know, it becomes eminently clear to the people that we're getting ready to take you into truancy court. And unlike other places, and only like Sussex Academy, they can choose to break camp. And they do that.
Oh, yes.
They'll roll right up in here and they'll withdraw so that they don't get into this. So when you factor all those things and some other things, we're rarely in truancy court. But we have been in. I've been in Frankfurt and I've been in Seaford. And so
I think that's a great thing.
So from a viewpoint, thinking all those factors, I think there's good reasons. Now, here's one point I think that is important for everyone to hear. There is a level of disconnect from the teacher standpoint, and I understand. Because when I come back with that student and say, look, we're trying to work with that kid, we want to make sure that he can pass, we need to do this makeup work. I've been a teacher for a short period of time. You've been one. Whoa, now I got all this. When are we ever going to deny credit? When we made a decision early on, somewhere around the time that Dave Parrington was working here, then when we started to deny credit, we eliminated their desire to come to school. So we decided that, you know what, we want to work all the way through the end of the process to deny credit, and that means truancy court. So it's been quite a while since we have denied a student credit. But we consider, and all educators in here, their lack of attendance will catch up with them, and they'll fail the course. But that isn't always true. So we have a little bit of disconnect on that part, but for us, we have a restorative philosophy. And it just isn't me, it's the administration as well. So I think overall, it is really good. But can we be better? Yes, we can. So maybe some of the ideas that you have or interventions, or even at your level, and what you did at SAS, we all play for the same team. Mm-hmm. And so let's work together to make it better.
Well, one more question, I guess, while I've got you up there. I mean, so, you know, there's one of the teachers told Ms. Jones that the kids are missing 20 and 30 days a year in the past. Is that normal?
Well, we did some research a couple of years ago across the nation and saw that a lot of schools were going to percentage rates. So we moved and voted by the board to go to a 15% rate that says that the student is excessively absent. And then when it goes higher to a certain point, 20%, they're chronically absent, which then moves that into. So when we're looking at students getting out under that 15% of 180 days, okay, for us as a LEA, that's 27 days. Now, are those 27 days that we've deemed that there was no way that they could redeem those? If it is, then we've got to go to truancy court. Because at 20 days, if you say that student has been absent for 20 days, you've got to move forward. At 15 days, you've got to start notifying that you might be moving forward. And at 10 days, you've got to immediately notify them and do a home visit. I think the breakdown in communication is, when do we say that student is absent? So going back to, we allowed long periods of time for notes to come back in, that's where we probably came up with that. Does that make sense?
And then so do teachers on our staff have the ability to access the computer that shows excuses for being off and not being off?
Yes. They have the ability to go onto the computer, push their cursor, and see whether it's absent, unexcused, or medical, or legal, or whatever that is.
But do they have access to what you have done? Like you've sent the 10-day letter or made the phone call or so on and so forth.
Right, and that, I think that's
excellent. And do they know that they have that access? Because that may be the problem, is just the communication.
It could be the
teachers, because, you know, teachers like, I've never heard anybody taken to truancy court. I didn't know.
Well, my concern is that they're contacting a board member prior to going through the channel's command.
It's not contacting me. A lot of it is just friends of mine just having talk.
I want to make real clear on the record, though, that we're not doing what we're supposed to do. And that's why I'm being really adamant about, I want to make sure I'm reiterating the fact that teachers do have access to find out if they're going to truancy court, correct?
Yes.
And so it's
in e-schools where they have access to it. They can see that in there.
Now, that's a good question. Where can they, what administrative levels from the IT department can they press in to see some things? That's a good question.
I don't know. I know ours, miscellaneous data, was a e-school thing, and the visiting teachers had the bottom half of that page where we put all our data in. So I don't know.
Here's something you must want to say. Mr. Morrow's in the building every day.
I was going to ask
that. If you got a problem, you got a question about a student, you can go ask Mr. Morrow, you can ask Dr. Healy, you can go ask about that student. Because we, in a restorative philosophy, we don't give up on any child. Everybody's got a different set of circumstances. Everybody's not going to run the race at the same speed. So we have to give each person kind of some individualized attention. But if a teacher, let's just say Markeisha, has attendance, and I'm Markeisha's science teacher, if I'm really trying to care about her and see her through, then I'm going to go walk to somebody, a counselor, an administrator, the attendance officer, and say, hey, Keisha's missed some time. Can we look into this situation? And we have that in the IST team. I mean, if any teacher wants to go the extra mile and really investigate how a child is doing in school, there's so many avenues. And the administration, including Mr. Marble, they have all our cell phones and they do all our emails. So a text message for a question or an email with a question is totally sufficient.
Right, and I want to say I get tremendous support. Dean Johnson is my supervisor as far as attendance is concerned. I've got Dr. Denby helping me. And now we're even thinking about attendance. Think about it. You would think that attendance is not as difficult in remote.
It is more.
Way more difficult.
More complicated.
Because in a, on campus, we get, well, typically for us, for your information, we will run about 40 to 70 students daily being absent when we have on-campus school. So, and I got my math from Sussex Central High School. That to me runs at about.
This is before my time.
Okay, all right. So if I mess this up. But we run on a daily 94 to 96 present rate. Now those students aren't here.
Mm-hmm.
So now, like, we've conducted 26 home visits. I've done 9 myself. We're considering setting up a daily schedule because, and this is some extra, so just give me the time out. But before my job, I'm running around the school trying to make sure classrooms are covered. Well, that's gone now. So I have more time to spend on attendance, but we need it. Mm-hmm. We actually have mm-hmm. We've recruited more people.
Well, that's what I was going to say. There's probably some paras or some teachers that their job is not as a labor intensive because of the students not being here that could help you in your
right.
position now.
Nick Pegalo has helped me. We've got several people. So we are thinking about scheduling regularly, weekly home visits to those students who are in crisis. But I anticipate if it doesn't get any better, we'll actually be in truancy court much more than we have been in the past. And if I could say the reason, we can't get them into school to experience the environment, the love that goes on here.
Okay. And just so you know, truancy court is not a punitive court. Truancy court is a therapeutic court. The whole purpose of truancy court is to get the kids into school by whatever means. It's not, and I've had parents and families come up and thank me for filing truancy charges because they got the help they needed through me or through the judge. They got the resources they needed to be successful. So it's not a.
But to this point, at Sussex Tech, it's not a problem. A truancy court, it may become one. But right, I just want to regret that because after last board meeting, somebody listened to the conversations in here, and they said, I didn't realize Sussex Tech was in such bad shape when it came to truancy based on our conversation at last month's meeting. Mm-hmm. I said, I don't believe we are, and that's why I'm reiterating here. Well, we do not have a problem at this point
right,
with truancy.
And that's what I wanted to discuss to get it out so that it is part of.
Was any of the things that I shared helpful?
No, this is very helpful. That tells me that we haven't had a problem. We may, but we haven't had a problem, and we don't have our own date. At the court, we're sharing with somebody else, which is a good thing.
I also want to add this, Mr. Reed. I wanted Mr. Marwood to give examples. When we have exhausted all the interventions, we have taken.
That's what it sounds like. Yeah, that's what it sounds
to
like.
To get
yeah.
some additional support. Did one last year, one year before. So
right. So I would concur with Ms. Jones. Over the years, truancy court is much more therapeutic, much
that's
more
great.
Interested in getting the student. Yeah. The judge that I work with.
Which which judge do you have?
I have the female, and I'm old, so I'm trying to recollect her name. I think she was a former teacher.
Judge Keenan?
Yes.
She's excellent.
And so when we go in there, it just works. So we may have to do that in this remote.
Well, hopefully we can.
But we'll deal with it when it comes.
Exactly. We don't have a problem at this point,
which is
great. Right
now, with the graduation rate that we have.
That's great.
And the attendance mm-hmm. rate and everything that's
good
going.
To hear.
I hope that you understand. Where mm-hmm. we're at with that.
Right, and I think maybe just sending out to teachers where your information is located to, if it is in e-schools, they could just pull it up and say, oh, yes.
Make an email to Mr. Marvel so that it doesn't get, hey, this is how you check the students.
Right,
out.
I know, but.
Thank you, Mr. Marvel.
Tomorrow I will reiterate some of the communications.
That would be
and
excellent.
Move forward and see how we can make it better, but stop by any time.
We'll make appointments sometime.
Okay. Mr. Marvel, what happens when a student drops out, withdrawals from Sussex Tech?
So at that point, the student, we're going to talk with the parent. So it gets a little complex in the fact that how old is the student, number one. But if they're at a certain age, the parent and the student, we meet with them, they have to come in, we check to make sure that they don't have any stuff like books, all those kinds of things. There's a big report filled out. And they come in and then they withdraw.
Any report to the local district? Because that problem, they're not our problem. But are they?
Sometimes, Dr. Masson, their withdrawal Well, their dropout technically is not a withdrawal or dropout. They're just leaving us and going back to another district.
Well, that's the point.
Mr. Morrow, yeah. Or there's special cases when we have seniors or students who are a little older in age. They may drop out of the day school, but we'll work with them in the adult ed program and get them in the adult ed program.
So there is follow-up.
It's a lot of follow-up.
Best we can.
That's what we're saying. We have a lot of different interventions we utilize based on the student and their condition.
Right. Plus, there's homeschool now. And it's pretty easy to get a homeschool number from DOE. And then now you're out from underneath of it. So a lot of our people that leave aren't dropouts. But do we follow up? It's our goal that if someone goes to you with an attendance problem, it's our goal that we're going to get up with you, someone.
Right. I used to get sent their attendance from other districts.
Yes.
Because everybody, every district, believe it or not, throughout the state does attendance a little bit differently.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm glad.
Thank you.
One other question.
Yes, sir.
Do we have a board policy on you going out to homes under the COVID now and visiting?
Great question. So I went to, when we started to do that, I went to the administration, I went to our COVID coordinator, and I said, what do you want us to do? And so in my office, I have a shield, I have gloves, I have everything that I need. And so when we go, I don't go inside the house, I stay at a distance. I got clear-cut communication from my leadership on how I should conduct that. And we try to follow it to the letter.
Perfect.
And he never goes alone. I want to make that clear. We always send someone to go with him.
That's our goal.
He doesn't go by himself.
That's our goal.
That's better than I.
Thank you.
Went by myself.
I've been by myself, but our goal is for two people.
Thank you, Mr. Marvel.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
As far as committee reports.
But if I may, Mr. Reed, Ms. Jones, you'd also mentioned in your comments about, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that there was a teacher or teachers who had contacted you about students turning off their screen or turning off their microphone or not being engaged in
right.
the class. My advice in this is that, you know, student participation, whether it's remote or otherwise, is always a function of engagement. And if whoever has been communicating with you, if you could refer them back to Dr. Denby or any of the other instructional coaches or those folks to talk about ways in which he or she might be presenting their lesson that, you know, I mentioned what kind of a student I was, but you're going to have to be pretty dynamic, in my opinion, in order to keep a student engaged on remote instruction.
Mm-hmm.
So if the teacher, and it sounds like there's some teacher frustration about student engagement, mm-hmm. so if you can boomerang them back into the system okay. to talk with the, you know, the building administration or counselor or Mr. Marvel or others at this point, we'll do the best we can to help that teacher.
Yeah. Is there any requirement that the student has to?
It's part of our conversation about, again, I would go back to the basic philosophy about quality of instruction and engagement. But we're also had conversation looking into the second marking period about cameras on.
Okay.
And, you know, our expectation is that there's an active engagement either mm-hmm. through the chat function
right.
or through a microphone function. But if I guess my point is that if you have contact with someone who's frustrated,
okay.
we'd like to help them. Okay? Thank you.
I think that's more of the rule than the exception.
What?
70-80% of the kids have their videos off.
Oh, yeah.
And even I take some courses with Ollie. And they say sometimes they think they're my connection better if the video is off, the internet connection.
Thank
Whether
you.
It's true or not, I don't know.
Yeah, that would be at the high school level for them to figure that out.
Yep.
So I appreciate it. Committee reports, is there anything to report back from any of the board committees that we're on?
Only through the board itself, but no, sir.
Okay. Move on to informational reports.
In your board packet was the updates regarding adult education. Ms. Eklund's here tonight, Dr. Denby for the high school. If you had any questions for either of them, Mr. Athey, regarding facilities, I would draw your attention under facilities that, and it's kind of a segue off of the CN conversation. We hoped we had a CN. We didn't. We still have challenges. Roof systems, HVAC systems, filtering systems, air quality, all of those things. And so I've asked Mr. Athey, he had already begun, but we're taking it a step further to look at ways, and we're at this point looking at air quality. First of all, we think we have good air quality along the way. But there's also systems, without getting too complicated, I know Mr. Berninger's in the room here, but where we can look at ionization systems that help. This is the way I think of it. I think of it as a bug zapper in the backyard. If you have a particulate going through the air, then the ionization thing blue lights it and kills it. And I'm probably wrong, but that's the way that's my analogy of it.
Yes.
And then we also want to do an inspection of all of our ducts and our duct systems and those types of things. So I want you to know that we're engaging in that process in order to look at and analyze and make a recommendation to you regarding the air quality in the building. And funding source might be minor cab, might be local money, might be a number of things, but we've got to get our arms around what the problem looks like first and then go on from there.
Question real quick, Mr. Athey. We had the, I see here it's videographic evidence of our underground. So is that complete? I mean, because that's been a while ongoing.
Correct. They had an issue with two of the video feeds, so they actually came back and redid it.
They charged us for the redo?
Their cost. To make it right. So, it's been a while, but the upside is they're taking every step to make it as good as they possibly can before giving us that report.
And you'll bring that back whenever it's complete? Yes. We'll go over that? Okay.
I'd also remind the board, and if you have questions for Mrs. Eklund or Dr. Denby, in January, we start our board workshops, or work sessions, or what the semantical term is. But one of those meetings is going to be dedicated to adult education. One will be dedicated for the high school, and one will be dedicated to facilities. That'll be January, February, and March. For your advanced calendar planning, so everything you want to know about adult education, Ms. Eklund's going to have the floor, and we're going to spend some time and talk about our program and what we do and services, likewise with facility and likewise with the high school. So that's coming to you down the road. They don't know what month they've got yet, but I'm going to let them know here shortly. And that's all I have under information items.
Move to public participation. Do we have any cards?
No, sir.
We're going to move on to agenda action items.
Okay, I want to make sure we item A under agenda action is the approval of the monthly financials. They were contained in your board packet representing the month of October. The amount of dollars that have been received this fiscal year. If there's a month that is pleasing to a business manager, it's the month of October. It's because most folks have paid their tax bills regarding property tax. And so it's the month where the needle goes up, and we're certainly appreciative of that along the way. But Ms. Jenkins is here if you have any questions regarding the financials. Otherwise, I would recommend they be approved for your consideration.
Okay. Need a motion to approve the monthly financials?
So moved.
Second.
Motion, Mr. Johnson, second. Mr. Brenningham, any discussion?
Uh,
No discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
None opposed?
Thank you. Item B, I've already spoke to the, I think this is iteration number four of the 2020-21 calendar revision, and would recommend for approval.
Need approval of the 2020-2021 calendar revision?
So moved.
Motion, Ms. Jones?
Second.
Second, Dr. Mastin?
And Dr. Carson, the changes are all because of the return day, right? That's what, basically.
Yes.
Yeah, change that and put the day back.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
It's like a linkpin.
Right. Because I just didn't have them side by side, but that's...
If I can make a general comment, which nothing we can do about it, but how can you educate people when last week, Tuesday is a holiday, election day, Thursday is a holiday, returns day, tomorrow in some districts, I don't know about Sussex Tech, is an in-service day, Wednesday's Veterans Day, so which means, you know, we're in school 3 days last week, maybe 3 days this week.
And Thanksgiving.
And then Thanksgiving, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know how you do it.
Well.
I mean, it's not, it's beyond our control, but.
You're correct.
And if Thanksgiving is early, it just adds to that whole.
Sure.
So we've got a motion and a second. Any further discussion on the calendar? Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
None opposed?
Thank you. Item C, recommend for approval the second reading of the temporary student attendance policy under the conditions of COVID-19 policy JEA.
Need a motion to approve.
Did we, the only question, do we, can we ask a question?
Well, let me get a motion and a second, and we'll do
okay,
questions.
Okay, fine, okay.
I got a motion, Mr. Brittingham, second, Mr. Johnson. Go ahead, Dr. Mastin.
Yeah, there was one teacher at the last meeting, you know, had a problem with the Thursday taking attendance. How was that finally resolved?
We had a follow-up conversation with the teacher, with supervising assistant principal and principal, and those issues have been resolved.
So how were they resolved?
It was a clarity issue, I believe, right?
That's correct.
Understanding.
There was a communication issue regarding attendance involving the parent, the teacher, and we laid out what the administrative position had been regarding attendance, and everything has been resolved.
Okay.
Any further discussion on the count? No. All those in favor?
Aye.
None opposed? Our next board meeting will be December 7th, 2020. I'd like to have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Motion, Dr. Mastin, second, Ms. Jones. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.